Tapes and Scouts, a podcast where two friends review every single movie they watch.
Max.
Tim?
It's time to talk about movies again.
I'm pretty sure under the desk is the dog eating a bone.
I'm pretty sure of that as well.
That's the knife puppy.
Well, you gotta give a dog a bone, right? Is it a bone or is it a knife?
No, it's definitely a bone this time, which is unusual. You usually just give it knives.
Do you think she sliced the person up and now they're just left with the bone? Human bone?
I don't know, but she's really enjoying it either way.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
She love her bone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know on that bone. Teach him a lesson there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's going ham on it.
Ham bone.
Ham bone.
Ham bone. Ham bone. Oh, ham bone.
That's right.
Ham bone. Well, welcome everybody to Tapes and Scowls. Did you rate and review on Apple Podcasts? I know we say it a lot, but it is one of the most helpful things you can do for us.
I just want to point out, if we get enough of these, we get to review movies on IMDb. Or not IMDb. Jesus. Rotten Tomatoes.
We get to review things for Jesus. And I think that's what it's all about.
For the Trinity Bible Church.
For Trinity, but for Padre. The children love Padre. They love Jesus. It all comes together.
It's really just, you're saving souls, is what I'm trying to say.
And I mean, my soul can't be saved, but it's not too late for Max.
No, it's real close to too late.
It's so close just by proxy, really. And I'm sorry, I don't know how to stop it.
I'm trying to keep the knife puppy alive, and it's our yeoman's effort.
I mean, I don't know if getting away from me would help you, but I feel like our call to arms on here is worth you sticking around.
Absolutely. I'm trying to redeem you in some way.
I'll give up on that.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
I'm trying.
You are my man at arms.
I'm trying. He-Man.
And the masters of... I know he's your favorite, right?
Man at arms is my favorite.
Boom. I paid attention once when you said a thing.
Absolutely.
So, would you like to go first, or do you want me to go first?
I
want to
go first.
Well, all right. Then we're ending on a down note.
First movie, third part. Hostel 3.
Yeah, baby.
Because I don't watch shit in order.
Why? I won't be controlled by your norms.
If you want to go back several episodes, I will tell you, it is... Go back, not the last one. Don't do that. The one before that one. Do that. Hostel 1 is when I reviewed that.
Why are you listening to these out of order?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Outside of a re-listen, why are you doing it out of order, people?
You just fucked up.
Why are you fucking up so much?
Not me.
No wonder the dog's gnawing on bones under the table.
It's true.
People who do things weird like
the bones of her enemies.
Bones of our enemies shall perish.
2011. Sounded like Cobra Commander.
Cobra!
Yeah. Watch this in August.
Oh, we got out of the July.
Out of the July.
That's good, because I couldn't think of a bit every time you said the July. I was like, I feel like I should like be preparing some sun tea or something. Like, I don't know.
1 hour and 28 minutes.
All right, that's passable.
This one is a horror slash, I'm calling it torture porn, because that's what the subgenre is.
Torture porn.
Directed by not Eli Roth this time. Scott Spiegel. This time.
Bois?
Starring Sarah Habel, Zule Heneo, and Kip Pardue.
Ah, the Pardue.
Pardue me.
Pardue my French.
Summary. Four men attending a bachelor party in Las Vegas fall prey to the Elite Hunting Club, who are hosting a gruesome game show of torture.
I really hoped you were going to say four men and a baby.
No. Nope.
Different torture movie, I guess.
Different torture movie.
Yeah, that doesn't get greenlit.
So this film definitely different than Hostel 1 and 2. It's funny that I'm talking about 2 so much, considering I haven't reviewed it until after you go. But it changes in how much it kind of leans on twists and the writing of the film, far less on the gore. There's a decent amount of cringy moments, but not even close to the other two Hostel films.
Interesting. I wonder if that's to its benefit or detriment.
I think it really depends on what your taste is.
Okay.
I think that if you're into the writing of it, this is going to be much more interesting. If you're into just the sheer shock factor, you're going to be disappointed by Hostel 3.
Interesting. Okay.
I do like the twist, and I think that it was successful in building out the Elite Hunting Club as an entity. We don't see it, obviously, past this. This is the last Hostel film in the series.
Until you make one.
Until I make a Hostel. Eli Roth, hit me up. It's devinx@yahoo.com.
Yep.
Yeah, hit me up there. You can bleep that out if you want editing.
It's up to you.
No, you don't have to.
Then it's in.
Just write me out. It's devinx@yahoo.com. It's cool.
It's cool, bro.
But don't write me if you're not Eli Roth. Seriously, I don't want your email. So, really banking on the twists, and I think it's pretty successful in surprising me. I was like, oh, wow, it actually did that. a couple times. You get kind of that twist within twists.
Nice.
Shutter Island effect.
Oh, okay. All right.
Shutter Island effect.
That instantly made sense to me.
So it does a pretty good job of that. I think it subverts expectations. So it's either going to like be like, oh, cool, this is different than the other hostels, I'm excited. Or it's going to be, this isn't the other hostels. Where's somebody's skin getting flayed and wearing it as a suit?
So good.
Yeah. It's whatever. Whatever you're into. Skin suits or not. IMDb, not so into it. 4.6 out of 10.
Okay.
Rotten Tomatoes critics, six critics into skin suits, 67%.
Interesting. Okay.
The audience, very much not into what this one's peddling. 1,000 plus.
Plus.
20%. Wow. A paltry 20%.
Wow.
I am coming in a little bit on the higher end here, 5.5 out of 10. I think it's more successful than it is not successful. I think it does more, but again, leans much more on the script than the previous entries.
I could see that. I could see that being your score too. It makes a lot of sense.
I think so.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Max, what would be your twist for Hostel 4? Would you keep it in some of the smarter kind of category, or would you just be like, I'm going to rip up some people?
I think when the name Hostel, you have to rip up some people.
You got to rip up somebody.
I think you have to do something that no one's ever seen before in terms of effects, and I think that's really what pushes it. But I think having something to say and an interesting script on top of that, and we'll get into Hostel 2, and I think where it fails and where it succeeds, I think is really what's going to push the series. And if there was a Hostel 4, you'd really have to have a good reason to write it. What I'd like to see is maybe the kids from Hostel 1, who would now in timeline be adults,
sure,
running things, because they're if you recall, the little kids who like kill people for candy and shit. So I think them running the hostel in that area of the world would be an interesting way to take it.
Kind of like maybe like a Hellfire Club kind of thing.
A little bit, yeah, definitely. It's a good way to put it, buddy.
Sometimes I know things even about the X-Men.
Damn Emma Frost.
Though, right? Am I right? Huh?
She ain't got a lot of clothes on.
No, she's not the only thing that's hard as a diamond.
Ding, ding, ding.
Hi-yo. My first movie, getting aroused by fictional characters. Here we go. My first movie is not fictional characters. It's 1973's Mean Streets, girl.
Oh, Mean Streets.
I have a bit of a confession. I should have done this movie earlier. I screwed up.
You screwed up?
I screwed up.
You're doing it now. I don't think there's any screwing up here. Mean Streets is the shit.
Mean Streets is cool. This is, I watched it on December 5th, actually, 2020.
Once you get to directed by, you'll all know why it's the shit if you don't already.
Correct. It's an hour 52 crime drama thriller. It's directed by Martin Scorsese.
I've heard of him.
And I believe this is the first time he works with De Niro.
I think it's the first De Niro in one of his very early films.
It is an early film. It's definitely one of his early gangster style films.
Yes.
He didn't exclusively do them to start.
He filmed this right around his house in New York.
Oh, really? I believe that.
Yep.
Because it has a kind of a guerrilla feel to it, the way it's filmed.
It's good.
Starring Robert De Niro, Harvey Keitel, and David Provel.
How good is Harvey Keitel in this movie?
This is Harvey Keitel's vehicle. Yes, De Niro's in it, but De Niro was more up and coming at this point, I guess. They're both so young, but Harvey Keitel is your main character. You're following him around. IMDb summary. A small-time hood tries to keep the peace between his friend Johnny and Johnny's creditors. Johnny is De Niro. Basically, he just keeps fucking up.
Okay.
He is fucking up bad, and no, it's so obvious, and he just cannot stop.
This is a weird role for De Niro, I think.
It is, and I will tell you, I watched this, I want to say on Netflix, and you know how Netflix starts playing? Do not watch that. It's like a pivotal scene towards the end that they show you, and I'm like, why would you make that? Like, it sets the tone. It's great line from De Niro, but it's just giving away so much. Do not watch that. Just go to it and click on it if you want to watch it. That's my big public service.
Fair enough.
Moment here. It's the first movie where he worked with De Niro. It has no real plot per se. De Niro fucks up a ton, and we wait to see if or how it destroys Keitel's life.
Yeah, it feels like it's kind of a slice of life for these criminals.
Right. It's like, hey, you're a criminal. Hey, how you do? Well, I'm, you know, Shit's fucked up.
This guy fucks up a lot.
So that's De Niro's point of view, but from Harvey Keitel's point of view, he's like, well, you know, I have a life. I'm trying to see this girl, and I, you know,
he Keitel kind of, is so good in this film.
I like what they did because it's 73. He's infatuated with a dancer who's black.
Yes.
And it's like he's just can't pull the trigger on asking her out and actually going through with it. It talks about some race stuff that's interesting.
And man, was Keitel in crazy good shape in this era? This Taxi Driver dude was fucking jacked.
Yeah, Keitel's so incredibly good. He's top 10, man. Keitel's so good.
Awesome. Yeah.
This is fun Scorsese gangster shit. Has some original moments. Even watching it so many years later, I still was like, wow, that's pretty creative. There's a cool cameo by David Carradine, which is fantastic. He is a beast in this movie.
So good.
Oh my God, you cannot bring him down.
He's so good.
Great Harvey Keitel stuff. Smart, young, brash. De Niro is extremely unlikable by design. You at no point will be rooting for De Niro.
No.
Not at all.
It's cool how Scorsese picked up on the depth of what he was able to achieve, because that's not an easy part to play.
No, it's so good.
It is.
It's so good. And I mean, going back, I don't know if I've ever watched this, but going to this movie from the 70s now, knowing all the things Scorsese's known for, knowing how many times he's worked with these people, I really enjoyed this movie.
It's good.
I thought it was pretty solid.
It's good because Keitel gets to essentially get everything that De Niro is pushing at him. So he gets the benefit of looking awesome in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's really, if you understand how acting works and acting and reacting works, De Niro's doing the heavy lifting.
Yes.
It's awesome.
Because De Niro's just like, God, I wouldn't want to be De Niro. I wouldn't want that life. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's so good. And there's some moments, which I won't spoil, where some of the dialogue he has is just so heavy. Even like, not even with the gangsters per se, but with his family, with Harvey Keitel, and just people in the neighborhood. It's just so heavy. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Really? And it is a talkie in that respect. It's a lot of dialogue heavy stuff because there's only so many set pieces.
It's what you can afford, you know?
Right. And it's pretty wild.
But they bring it.
They bring it hard.
Yeah, they do.
So IMDb gives us a 7.2 out of 10. Rotten Tomato critics, 62 critics. You want to guess it?
Go with 91.
95.
Damn, okay.
Yeah, you're in there. The audience, 54,827 people, 84%.
They fucked up.
I still think it's pretty solid, though, for that many people.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely.
Because I don't feel like this movie's everybody's, you know,
it's not going to be your favorite Scorsese movie.
No, but I think it's great.
I agree.
I gave it a 7 out of 10. I don't know what my favorite Scorsese is, but it's probably not this one, but like this one good.
It's funny when you look at this one, you can see pieces that made De Niro, Keitel, Scorsese, you get to see what made them them in this movie. It's really cool to see.
You're almost witnessing them grow up in acting.
It's wild shit. It's just like, man, what the fuck is going on? Like you said, there's no, like you're seeing a kind of slice of life film. So this follows
just
like
a that day-to-day life.
American Graffiti style, where it's just like, what the hell's going on in this movie? And you're just like, man, this is fucked up shit here. Like, right. It's really good, man. You can see why Scorsese just became who he became.
Right. There's no clear villain, per se, other than De Niro just fucking up.
Kind of themselves, right? Man versus himself.
Right.
Classic conflict. It's just so good. It's so smart.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this movie, yeah, that movie kills. I'm glad you got to watch it.
Yeah, definitely everybody check this one out if you're a Scorsese fan.
Yeah, definitely. Tim, no surprise.
Are you going to do Bambi?
No, I'm going to do Hostel 2.
Oh, not Bambi 2?
No. Bambi Goes West? No, not that one. 2007. I watched it in August of 2020. 1 hour and 40 minutes.
Hmm.
It is a horror slash torture porn. This one directed by Eli Roth again, like the first one. Starring Lauren German, Heather Matarazzo, and Jay Hernandez from the first one. Movie summary. Three American college students, this time they're female, studying abroad, are lured to a Slovakian hostel and discover the grim reality behind it.
What abroad are they studying?
This one girl, Laura German, basically.
Lauren German.
Gotcha. So, yeah, she kind of like, it's really cool out here. You should come over here. I think it's Lauren German who does that. It could be a different woman. I don't know. But she, essentially, they're drawing her naked. And she's like, you should come hang out over here. It's really cool. And so they do. And they get murdered a lot.
It happens.
Yeah.
Once.
This is a really hard film for me to evaluate.
Okay.
Much like yesterday. It's a really tough one that I feel like does some things really well, but misses so much when it misses that it really drags down the successes of this film.
Yeah.
There's one particular conversation that I want to highlight. It's between, so there's, you get to see the story from the children's point of view, as well as the people who are in the elite hunting club. So the elite hunting club, real quick, is rich people who pay to murder people and get away with it.
Sure.
Period. So you get to see the story from the people in the hunting club's perspective, a brother to a pair of brothers, as well as these three college girls. So the pair of brothers have this really interesting conversation that will constantly resonate with me. I think it's an awesome conversation in terms of writing. They talk about how when you're kids, you kind of know the younger, when you're a teenager, right? Like freshman, sophomore, junior, you kind of know the dudes who have been laid. Like you just know these dudes, and that's what they're talking about. You're like, you just know that he got banged. Like you just know that he's been there, that he's done something we haven't done before. And he's talking about that in context of how you know how it feels to murder somebody.
Oh, nice.
Really interesting conversation that I don't know why Roth would think of this, but it's such an interesting piece of dialogue, and they're jogging in the morning. They're doing their workout in the morning while they're having this conversation, casual conversation. Fucking fantastic piece of writing. I really enjoyed it, and it was like disturbing and disgusting and relatable all at the same time.
That's really smart, because it humanizes with something most people would know. It's like when you're of that age, you obsess of getting laid or you get laid.
Exactly.
Which is either a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah. No, it's exactly right. And it's so smart and so interesting. And there's things this movie are doing that are on that level. Mm. And then there are other things this movie are doing that are so low-hanging fruit that it really cancels out the smart that's in this film. Mm. There is a murder sequence, a set piece, if you will, in this film that is so hard to look at and so hard to watch that the dudes who do the effects, like the high-ups, K&B did the effects for this. So we're talking about Kurtzman. Sure. We're talking about Nicotero. We're talking about Berger.
Top shelf guys.
The guys. They got sick watching this sequence. Mm. They're like, this is the hardest to film sequence we've ever been involved in.
Wow.
And it goes back to way back to when you were watching the Lady Bathory movies.
Yes.
There's very much a scene that's in that ilk.
Gotcha.
And they were like, we had such a tough time with the filming. And like, at this point, they've had a 30 plus year career.
And one hell of one.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Kind of pinnacle of makeup effects. And they had a tough time with this film. Awesome. Awesome to hear. So, and it's a shame that I talk about these high highs, because this movie suffers from fucking low lows, man. It's really bad. But at the end of the day, if you're going into it thinking you're going to see some people get fucked up, you will. 100%. If you want to see a little bit more than that, you will see shining moments of it, and you'll see kind of what's marred, I think, Ross' career, of like these moments of fucking brilliance that are overshadowed by these really poor decisions that he's made. I think he's awesome. He has an encyclopedic knowledge of horror, and he's a fantastic voice for the genre, but I think that he picks certain things to pick that are above him, or not worth his time, maybe. Something that doesn't quite grok. The puzzle pieces don't quite fit together, and you end up with a movie like Hostel 2.
It's interesting. I feel that way about M. Night Shyamalan.
I think that's also a fair evaluation.
I feel that's how people feel about Nicolas Cage. It's like that kind of, they're all in that ilk.
Yes.
They're like, they are capable. If they show up and the stars align, it's going to be good.
Brilliant.
But not everything's Raising Arizona, you know what I'm saying?
Oh my God, Raising Arizona is so good.
I agree.
You hit on one of my top three for him.
Boom, got it.
Nailed it.
I know you.
IMDb gives Hostel 2 a 5.5 out of 10. Okay. Rotten Tomatoes critics, 113 critics went to Hostel 2.
Nice.
44%.
That sounds right.
Audience, 250,000 plus.
Plus?
39%, not having it. I'm coming in above them, but only just at a 5 out of 10.
You either love it or you hate it.
Right on the razor's edge for this movie, because
ironically.
I think the critics and the audience are right, where it's probably a 4.5, honestly, but the moments of brilliance are so good and so smart for what they are that I'm going to give it the 5.
Give it the nod.
So goes Hostel, Hostel 3, Hostel 2 in order for me.
And I would probably agree with that. I haven't watched those movies in a while, but because they're hard. Why would I go back to it? I know it's hard.
That's right.
I like easy mode. Speaking of easy and not good.
That's why you're easy.
Hey, like Sunday morning.
Damn right.
Second movie here is one I know you've seen, one I know you didn't like. And guess what, people? I didn't like it either. It's from 2020, and it's Wonder Woman, 1984.
That's so bad.
I watched it on December 31st. This is how I brought in the new year.
Fuck. This was like my last year of Rambo Last Blood.
Yeah, jeez. I left this one behind me in the dust. This is the last movie for me for the year.
Fuck you, 2020.
Yep.
Fuck you.
This movie is 2 hours and 31 minutes. But why?
Even the filmmakers don't know. Patty Jenkins doesn't know why this movie is.
Patty Jenkins confused. She's like, I don't think I ordered this much.
Yeah, what? How long is it?
Your genre, action, adventure, fantasy.
Long.
Superhero.
Long?
Yeah. Directed by Patty Jenkins, who I generally don't mind.
She's awesome.
Yeah, I like her. Starring Gal Gadot, who I really don't mind.
Awesome.
Chris Pine.
Fine.
Pretty good, usually.
Yeah, I like Chris.
Kristen Wiig?
I got to tell you about Chris Pine. Let me tell you about my favorite. Smoking Aces. Remember, he's in that movie? God damn it, he's good in that movie.
You know, we really got to watch Smoking Aces, both of them. Because let me tell you, I love the first one.
Oh, love. My God. Perfect.
Because it's like, you feel like it should be a guilty pleasure, but it's kind of not, right? Like, it's right
Joe
there.
Joe Carnahan.
There he is. Oh, my goodness. Kristen Wiig and Pedro Pascal.
Yeah, they're all in it, too. Sorry
about
that,
man. They're all great people, just not here.
Fantastic.
And, I mean, if you like this movie, let me know why.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
Because I'm going to tell you, I've read a lot of Wonder Woman. My wife loves Wonder Woman. I've got a pretty good knowledge of Wonder Woman. And this movie is kind of like a bastardization of a lot of those ideas.
There's so many things here that are ruined.
Right. You could have picked like one or two stories and left a bunch of them out, and you could have made a good movie out of this. It's kind of how I felt about the Batman Superman movie. Like, why throw in Doomsday? Why throw away this big story that everyone knows if you know the comics at all?
That's a great parallel. Iron Man 2, you wreck Demon in a Bottle, which is arguably the best Iron Man story.
Like, easily.
God, easily. Damn.
There are issues of Iron Man where he's fighting Machine Man and he's drunkenly ripping him apart. And it's like, oh man, good thing he was half robot as it was.
Yeah, holy shit.
But let's not talk about good Marvel things. Let's talk about bad DC things. IMDb summary, Diana must contend with a work colleague and businessman whose desire for extreme wealth. Extreme. Sends
so,
the
yeah.
world down a path of destruction after an ancient artifact that grants wishes goes missing.
Mm-hmm.
So wishes is one thing. It's kind of a weak device in this respect. It's not Aladdin. It's not about a genie, so it's kind of a weak
plot for sure.
device.
Yep.
My bullet points, you may have heard this movie's a mess. That's because it is.
It's wretched.
I didn't mind Cheetah at all, honestly, but Max Lord was awful and not enough like his comic version.
Man,
so
poor Pedro Pascal. Jesus.
So over the top. And like Max Lord is such a complicated villain. He's a very real world villain.
Yes.
And he accomplishes some stuff in the comics that no one really ever accomplishes. No villain really accomplishes.
It's a fair point.
And he is amazing. And the way, and he really, it's funny, like a lot of these DC movies are grimdark.
Yeah.
Max Lord is a grimdark villain. You should have kept him like he is in the book.
It was really bad. Like, they were just like, remember 80s infomercials? Let's just make that into a villain.
And it didn't need to be 80s per se.
No, it's
are you
so
trying to,
bad.
Are you trying to call back the George Perez run from the 80s, which was awesome?
Fucking goddamn it. Is there anything Perez touched in that time period that wasn't fucking genius?
No, there really wasn't.
God damn
there
it.
Really wasn't. He's so damn good. I think that's what they were going for, and he introduced this variation of Cheetah, this version. And I think that's all they wanted to reference. And they forced so much shit into it. They forced the invisible jet.
And I think you nailed it. Everything that was cool about Wonder Woman in that time period felt fucking awful in this movie.
Yes, yes.
Really bad.
Right.
Like, it made me question, and I'm glad you're bringing this up because you're the comic book guy
there
of the
I
two
am.
Of us, for sure. Like, I'm pretty sure all this was, you know, when I watch the movie, I'm like, did all this fucking suck this hard when I read the comics? Like, absolutely not. I'm pretty sure Perez wouldn't let me down at all.
No, absolutely not. Perez is amazing, and this is just not.
No.
This just isn't. And, like, I'm watching it, and I knew it was long, and I'm just like, I don't like long movies, but I can tolerate them if they're going somewhere.
Absolutely.
And I'm just like, well, where? How
your highest reviewed film is over 3 hours on this podcast.
That's
just
true.
Just pointing that out.
That is true.
To your defense.
Is that Hamilton?
Hamilton.
Yeah. It's so funny to me that that's my highest rated. But it deservedly so. It's just like I'm watching scene after scene after scene of things that are not necessarily bad, but like there's no payoff. What is this going to? Why is it in here? Like a lot of people bitched about the opening scene, and I'm like, well, the scene itself is fine. Where she's young and it's her competing in like Olympic game style shit.
It may be the most poignant lesson taught in the entire fucking film.
Yes. And then ultimately, what, you know, it's like, I don't understand what they were going for. I've not even done my bullet points. I have so much to ramble about.
It's a lot.
Why the 80s, the Perez 80s comics are awesome, so don't make me remember them watching this crap.
What a great bullet point.
Wonder Woman moves in strange ways, and it's so funny when she did like a dash attack with her legs out and she kind of like roped somebody. All I could think about was Mortal Kombat 3.
Hmm.
Was a striker does it with his baton. It's the same awful move that doesn't look correct.
No. And I loved playing striker because he was a wretched pile of shit in Mortal Kombat 3.
He threw grenades at people.
They did.
He had the worst costume ever.
Awful.
I'm kind of happy there's a new
overweight
Mortal Kombat.
Overweight cop.
In weird strike gear.
Yep.
Less plot and more plot devices. many of them.
Oh my God. It's so bad. When she can't get the lasso around him at the end.
Yeah.
And then just suddenly she can. For no explicable reason other than I guess she tried on the third or fourth attempt. And sure, why the fuck not?
Sure.
It's we not needed a to end sense. The movie at some point. That's what it felt like.
I just...
Ugh.
And I wasn't drunk. I know I said this was New Year's. We weren't drinking.
Here's the thing. If you have a stone that could grant wishes, and she wishes to bring Steve back, why isn't Steve back? Why does he have to possess the body of a weird man she has now raped?
Right.
I don't understand, and I'm not comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
I
if there was
like
some
it.
Other, like, if there was some other wording she used and that happened, it would have been one thing.
Why couldn't we just bring him back? The stone can grant any wish. We've proven that in the third act of the film.
Correct.
So why can't he just come back?
I think this movie would have been great if he was just a more shitty businessman, more shady Pedro Pascal's character, and he did wretched things to get there.
Yes.
And there's no wishes. I think if you take out the wish aspect of this movie, because Cheetah, while not like the greatest thing in the world, she was fine.
Fine.
She made sense.
You needed a muscle character to protect him.
And
sure.
Like as she slowly evolved and got a little more feral, like for lack of a better word, as she went on. Like when she was fighting in the leopard print shit in the museum. Was it a museum? I don't even remember. When she was fighting and she was human-ish.
Yeah.
I thought that was one of the better parts.
Agreed.
So I don't know. People shit on Cheetah.
Certainly better than the third act when she was full Cheetah. And it was just like, this fight scene is awful.
Oh, yeah.
Bad. Yeah. We're building
it up. It wasn't
to
cats,
this.
Though. That's something it's got it, going
almost.
For it. Well, maybe that's coming up.
Whoa.
Spoiler.
Whoa.
It's coming up. Anyways, this movie not good. I'm not going to waste any more of your precious, precious time on it. So let's go to the scores. IMDb gave it a 5.4.
Generous.
Rotten Tomato Critics at the time I watched this, which would have been a little close to this.
Yeah, yeah.
60%, 398 critics.
Somebody got paid off.
Of course. And if I was a critic, I probably would too.
I would
get it at me, Rotten Tomatoes.
I would accept your money. I'm not even gonna lie.
But we're honest about it. People don't mind that.
Fuck yeah.
Just shy of 3,000 people gave this 74% for the audience.
What are you, drunk? You're not getting paid, you crazy audience idiots.
Well, speaking of, this is so I gave it a 4.5.
I think generous as well.
But my wife, this has a wife's score.
Uh-oh. Please, wife, don't do this to me.
She's going to do it to you.
Oh,
do you want to guess the wife's score, knowing what I just gave you?
I'm going to go 7.
7.5.
Mother of God, wife.
And I said to her, how? How? You've read the books. I bought my wife every Wonder Woman book since we started dating.
Yeah.
That's how much she likes Wonder Woman. And you know what she said? And it was fair. She said to me, I'm just so happy that I have Wonder Woman movie.
You know, and it's... a shame after the first movie that we have to say that about the second movie. Because God, and the Saint, Patty Jenkins is fucking awesome. Gal Gadot is fucking awesome.
Yep.
We've proven that we can make just an awesome film with Wonder Woman as an IP. She doesn't need help. She doesn't need anybody else. Her as a character can hold the weight, even with a terrible villain like she had in the first one.
Yep.
She can do it.
Yep.
But this one's just please try harder.
Please?
All of you out there. Try harder.
Or else.